If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week is a genuine reality TV success story, having turned a memorable stint on ITV's Love Island into a burgeoning career as a TV presenter, a documentary filmmaker, and a campaigner. After leaving Love Island in 2018, she soon found herself arm-in-arm with Made in Chelsea's Sam Thompson after sliding into his DMs. And the pair now live together, having bought their first home last year, which they're renovating from the ground up. She started a career in national government as a civil servant, and she's recently revisited her more serious side in a series of powerful documentaries for BBC Three on rape culture, revenge porn, and one soon to be released on disordered eating. It's a role that's seen her make a huge difference and find a voice, putting her own experiences front and centre and sharing her insights and learnings and views with government ministers and even the Duchess of Cornwall. And now she's back on our screens, having graduated from contestant to host. She's at the helm of Love in the Flesh, a new BBC Three dating show which brings five couples who've been dating online together in the real world for the very first time. Really looking forward to talking to her. So let's dial her up. It's Zara McDermott. Good afternoon, good evening. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. That was a great intro.
Thanks. Was it all true?
Yeah, but I've never really listed it out like that before. And I was like, wow, I'm quite impressed with myself.
Oh, that's nice, Sarah. Because that's how I see you, as having researched you. And actually, the more I read, the more I want to keep adding, because you've become inordinately busy but impressively impactful alongside it in all that you do. And I love the fact that you have the ability to make me think and laugh almost in the same breath, and that's a brilliant combination.
Oh, thanks, that's so lovely. I mean, it's been a real whirlwind of a few years for me. I mean, I did Love Island like 4 years ago now, so
yeah.
It doesn't feel like that. It almost feels like it was a lifetime ago and yesterday at the same time. Really weird. But yeah, it's been an absolute whirlwind of a few years. And I think that, you know, I've faced a lot of challenges, I've battled the misconceptions and the stigma of reality TV and said, well, actually, just because I've done this type of television doesn't make me, you know, doesn't put me into a bracket, doesn't make me this type of person, doesn't keep me in a box. Like, I won't allow myself to be kept in a box because of something that I did when I was 21 years old, you know?
Totally right. Totally. And that's what I love about the way you have navigated the last 4 years, because you've just said yourself, it felt like a lifetime ago and yet a minute ago. Clearly, looking back at old clips of you, you're a very different person back then.
Yeah.
And you've never apologised for that. You've shared all your learnings, especially the really difficult ones. But you have, and you've done it in a way that is collaborative with other women who've been there, but that has also affected change. And that's not easy, Zara. That really isn't. And that requires work. And not for your own, you know, you're not doing it to your own ends and means. This is to help others.
Yeah, totally. I mean, documentaries are, you know, they're liberating. The ones I've done, I mean, slowly now I would love to take a step more into, I mean, and I am, my next film is going to be about disordered eating that I'm doing with BBC Three. So we just started making that literally the other day. But, you know, it came from a, almost like blossomed from me sharing a really hard truth that I never thought would be revisited. And it was really, really tough to make that film. And it took a really long time to make that film. And at times, you know, when you're going over something traumatic that's happened to you, it's almost like, you know, you think, I really hope, I was always thinking, I really hope that this does make a difference. And you never know how something is going to be received. You know, I think that from my history, from my experience, especially with revenge porn, you know, I blamed myself a lot. And I was scared that I was still going to be blamed by other people. And you know what? You do get, you still do get those people. You still do get those people online that say, well, if you didn't want to be a victim of that, you shouldn't have sent it. They're the same people that say, if you, you know, you don't want to be a victim of a sexual assault, you shouldn't wear something in particular. Like, I don't agree with any of those things, but at the same time, it's almost conditioned into you. And it was definitely conditioned into me from when I was in school. So sharing that and being really open and vulnerable was tough. But once I overcame that and I started to get a positive response and so many people saying, oh my gosh, thank you so much, you've helped me, it like almost liberated me from like the demons that I had faced as a teenager.
And you know, you've just called out exactly the right people there, but in terms of their attitudes being wrong and not yours. If you are in a relationship with somebody, regardless of your age, by the way, and you want to share, by way of agreement, images of yourself or each other with one another, there is no expectation that that should be shared publicly.
Absolutely. It's like if you're in a relationship with someone, you trust them, right? You don't, when you're in a relationship, you don't necessarily see that relationship coming to an end. And do you know what? Even if you're not in a relationship, if that's something that you want to do, then that's totally down to you. It's the person who then goes on to portray that confidence and share that to someone else is when it becomes a breach of your privacy. So yeah, I think we really need to change the kind of wording and the way that it's perceived in society. And I do believe that, you know, as the generations go on and as, you know, I have children and my children have children, I think that society will change and view things differently. But I think that there's such a generational difference and misunderstanding between how technology impacts relationships.
One thing that I think might be helpful to you as you open yourself up as a documentary filmmaker. But first I'll start with something that I hope will sit well in your ears. So earlier this week, I was out making a documentary of my own. But my makeup artist, a wonderful woman I've worked with for over a decade now, we were going from location to location. And she said, oh, you've got coming on the podcast this week. And I said, Zara McDermott. She went, oh my God, you've got to watch her revenge porn documentary. Every parent should watch it. Every parent of teenagers. And she sent me the link. Do you know what I mean? She was that passionate that I must. And I said, don't worry, I'm going to watch it because Zara's coming on the show. And she's absolutely right. She's discovered it as a parent full of these concerns and then sat down and shared it with the teenagers. So your work, and I know that you really went there on camera and you shared a lot of very difficult, deep emotional responses to your own situation. That's really helped.
And also, I believe that we're moving out of an age where people want to look at people's idyllic lives on, especially on social media and on the TV. Like, people actually want to see genuine, real, relatable situations, and actually they're starting to want, rather than using TV as a means of escape, they're starting to use TV as a means to educate. I think people are becoming a lot more receptive to things like that. I think 5 years ago, it was all about, it's so weird how social media as well changes. It was all about how you look and aesthetics. And sometimes it still is, but I think people are becoming so much more open to using, especially social media, to learn and to understand things. And I think that's brilliant because it means that there's so many more people open to listening.
Yeah, but also I think it's because people like you are there doing both of those things, right? You can look amazing in an image and that be okay, but you can equally and very articulately challenge narratives and explore them. And you do that really well, Zara. And I think that's actually, I'm gonna crash into my first question with you on that, because it's about turning expectations people have of you on their head. Are you ready?
Yeah, go for it.
I think something a lot of people would be surprised to know about you is that before you joined Love Island, worked for the government as a civil servant in a variety of roles in the Department of Energy and Climate Change and in the Department of Education. But what I wanted to know is, what else would people be surprised to know about you? And when else have you surpassed other people's expectations of you or felt that they've woefully underestimated you?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that comes back to what I was talking about, really, about... I think reality television, and I think people don't see it for what it is, right? I was a 21-year-old girl. I also, you know, to be honest, reality TV was not... I love reality TV, I always have, but I never thought I was the kind of person who would be able to go on it, because I'm not the loudest person in the room. I'm not the most outspoken person. And maybe people would be surprised at that about me. Like, I'm not very good in big groups of people. I'm quite withdrawn and shy. And some people think that my boyfriend's always like, come on, Zara, say something. But I get very overwhelmed by a lot of people, and I'm not the biggest talker. So it's actually interesting when you see me in like the work environment, when I'm doing my presenting, when I'm doing Love in the Flesh, I look like the most confident girl and the most outspoken person who can just do anything. But actually, all of the time, I'm battling with this like inner actual me, who's like actually, as I say, not the loudest person in the room, not an extrovert, quite an introvert. And I am all of those things. And also, you know, trying to actually change for the better in a way, be more confident in myself, be more outspoken. Don't be afraid to say yes to everything. Say no to things if you don't feel comfortable. And I've always been the opposite of that. So as I'm getting older, I'm learning and growing into that. And I think maybe people on social media think that that's me all the time, but it's just not. That is just a part of me that I'm trying to work on, I guess. But I also think that, you know, reality television... This is what I was coming back to from before. Reality television, I think you're always put in a bracket, you know. As I say, I was 21 years old when I went on it. I was like, no, I don't want to do it. And then in the end, my friends and family were like, come on, Zara, it's an opportunity. Take this opportunity. Don't say no. You can always go back to working in government if you want to. Like, at some point in your life, you've got the rest of your life to do all of that stuff. Why don't you take this opportunity now and see where it leads you? So I said yes to it, and I threw myself in the deep end so much. And I think that when I came off, I didn't realise how much of a box I'd be put in. Like, I was just put in a box with every single other person who's ever done reality TV ever. And people automatically assume you're stupid. You don't know what you're talking about. You have no self-awareness. Like, people assume all of these things about you that it's actually quite... hurtful, because you think, but I'm not all of those things. And, you know, to be honest,
it's quite damaging, people, isn't it?
Most people on reality TV aren't all those things either.
No, but I think you become defined by the edit. And the thing that used to always trouble me is the fact that you're going to go on and you're going to give 24/7 of yourself on camera, and then somebody that's never met you is going to edit that together and take pieces of that to tell a wider story. Which, you know, they're not doing anything wrong in that. It's just how much of you is really being represented and how much of you is being kind of involved in that decision as to how you're being represented. The answer is, well, actually very little. What my worry was almost always with reality television is that if you're not emotionally equipped to deal with the fallout of how you've been edited, you can sometimes become defined by that edit. You become the person that they created in the edit for you.
I think totally, to be honest, like, I know for me that wasn't really the case. Like, I was very, I mean, to be honest, when I went into the show, I assumed that every move I made was going to be on TV. And I just thought, like, I'm here, I am making scrambled eggs for breakfast. This is going to be on TV. Oh, I'm going to go and like talk to this guy. That's going to be on. Like, I thought that everything was going to be on TV. So when I got out and I watched it, I was like, oh my God, hey, not everything I did that day was on TV. And I was so confused because I was so naive and I didn't understand. I didn't think that that was even a thing. I thought they just showed everything. But obviously they've got to make 24 hours into 45 minutes. Like, it's not possible. But I didn't even think about it. So totally, it was definitely a massive learning curve for me, for sure. Gone are the days that we should always put people in into a box, because everybody's different. Everybody has their own story. I was really gutted when I came out and I saw and I felt a narrative, you know, and you still feel, you still do feel that narrative. Like, some of the messages I get, it's like, oh my God, you're so stupid. I'm like, no, I'm just not.
Good for you. Yeah.
Just, it gets to the point where you just, I don't even take any notice anymore. Yeah, it's just got to that point now. And I'm grateful to be at that place, but it's taken a long time to get there.
Yeah. And also, it depends what mood you're in that day, right? Because some days a comment like that might really get to you. And other days you just think, I pity the fool that wrote that. Because it never occurred to me to write to anybody I've never met and tell them on their wall that they're stupid, right?
Yep.
I mean, who does that? You've got to be really kind of messed up in the head to think that's an okay thing to do.
But also, one thing that I always think is, like, we're all human. It's okay to think, oh, I don't like her dress. Oh, I don't like how she said that. It's totally okay to think that. Don't have to say it.
You wouldn't cross the street, would you, to tap somebody on the shoulder and just say, by the way, you look terrible.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't. That's what I find hilarious.
But it's the same thing.
I know. People don't think it is, though, do they? Because there's no accountability.
Yeah, there is. But that has to change with social media. That has to change. There has to be accountability. But when we talk about exceeding other people's expectations, what about exceeding your own? How do you feel when you find yourself in a room with, you know, the Duchess of Cornwall and a room full of brilliant, brave campaigning activists who are all there to be celebrated for their contribution? Like, and you go, hang on a minute, I'm not even 30.
Yeah, I do. I sometimes I'm like, how the hell did this happen? Why am I here? I almost feel out of place. And I think that, to be quite honest, over the years, and coming back to what we were talking about before, I think there's been a lot of people online who've made or tried to make me feel like I don't deserve it. And, you know, there's been people who've tried to make me feel like I'm not the right person to be in the position that I'm in. And then those moments when something like that does happen, you get a personal, like, thank you from the Duchess of Cornwall for, like, the work that you've done, that makes it all, like, it makes it all just, all those horrible kind of thoughts that I sometimes have in my head just disappear. And I'm like, no, I should be proud of myself. And, like, I don't normally ever get that where I sit down and I'm like, oh, I'm so proud of myself. Like, I don't do that enough. And I should do it more. And it's something that I need to work on myself, is, like, I don't sit there sometimes and then I'm like, oh my God, this is, like, I'm so proud of myself, because I feel like I still have so much more to do.
Yeah, you're only just beginning.
Yeah.
You're really at the foothills of, like, where you can go.
My kind of vision for the next few years for me is starting to step away from making documentaries about what I've experienced and starting to make documentaries about things that are going on around me, not necessarily things that I've experienced, but things that I want to understand more. So my next film is going to be Disordered Eating, something similar to what you were talking about earlier. But yeah, I've been wanting to make this film for at least a year now, and I'm really looking forward to making it, because this is something that affects so many young people, something that I've seen, but not something that I've necessarily been like, I have an eating disorder.
So you don't consider yourself to have disordered eating. You're just fascinated by it as a subject matter.
But
if you're going to keep making documentaries, you're going to have to step out of scenarios that aren't personally your own experience.
Absolutely. And it's related to me in a way, because also, like, my social media, I'm very aware, like, can sometimes look very glamorous and all of those things. So for me, it's really important to also address, like, how have I potentially, you know, am I part of the problem as well? Like, so it kind of does relate to me, but I want to understand more about this topic, and I want to move away from, yeah, there's only so many documentaries you can make about your own experiences. And then there comes a point where you have to say, right, there's so many other issues that are affecting young people. All of my films have been shown in schools. To me, I want to make like a really big list of films that can be shown in schools to educate young people. Like, that's my kind of vision. I'm going to have a collection of several different films so that when teachers are in PSHE and they want to talk to their kids about something that's quite difficult, or if you're a parent and you're like, God, I need to have this conversation with my child, right, Zara McDermott on iPlayer, let's look at rape culture, disordered eating, X, Y, Z, you know, that's my vision for myself, is like where I want to go.
And do you know what? Maybe you needed to start with subject matters that you could talk about firsthand to give you the confidence to understand how to hold a narrative, to tell a story.
Yeah.
You know, in an age of reality TV or Instagram and IGTV lives or whatever, I think sometimes we think that if we just open our mouths and talk, that qualifies as content. And actually, great content is great storytelling. And that's a skill.
Absolutely.
And that's a craft.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Love in the Flesh, your new show, is all about a group of people who first met online. And oh my gosh, some of them have been talking online for years. But you then bring their relationships into the real world, and they're meeting for the first time on camera. And it's proper cringe moments, I've got to say. It's a bit like, oh my God. You know,
some of them are no
wonder you've never met in real life.
I know.
Okay, but I wanted to know from you, when have you had a meaningful connection with another person, despite possibly never having met them? You know, it might be somebody that you just have an online relationship with, but they've made a difference to you, or they've accelerated, your own position, helped you, added value.
I can't lie. Every single person who has had a meaningful, well, there are some people, but I can't give you exact people because they are people from my social media. But mostly everyone who's made a meaningful impact on my life, I've met or I've gone on to meet because they have made an impact on
my
life.
Oh, great. So how did those relationships start then? Online, DMs, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so like I would say that, and it's really interesting that I'd say the people that have made the biggest impact on me are people who I've met on social media and have sent me messages about, you know, their experiences and how my documentaries and films may have helped. And then, you know, it's so crazy because you'll be speaking to someone and then I'll be walking, like the other day I was walking down Oxford Street and this girl was like, oh, hi, like, we spoke on Instagram last year about my revenge porn experience and you really helped me and you told me where to go and what to do and, like, just want to say thank you. So they're the people that, like, I would say they're like the online connections that have really made a difference to me,
yeah.
I would say. Yeah.
Because sometimes, I suppose, you know, we feel that it's certainly in your experiences, I would imagine, that you share a lot and you give a lot, but you don't necessarily ever have a way of measuring the value of that for other people until you have a situation like that.
Yeah. Totally. That's exactly how I would... Yeah, you put it very eloquently. Yeah, you don't actually... There's no way of... you can't truly understand. Like, you can see, oh, okay, it's number 3 on BBC iPlayer, but, like... That just means that it's number 3, like, on a website. But, like, how is... people are actually watching it. Like, it's quite a hard thing to get in your head that people are actually sat at home in front of their TV watching it. And thousands of people at any one time are doing that. Mm. And it's, like, really hard. So, like, some people can be like, oh, my God, it's doing so well. Like, you know, or your documentaries have been shown in so many schools. But, like, until someone actually comes up to you and says... this is what impact it's had. It's sometimes hard to, like, get it and really understand that. The people who've really made a strong impact on my life and I've had a really strong, connection with would be people that I would make it my mission to go and make sure I meet them and make sure I talk to them. You know, people who have come across at work, you know, spoken to online for a while at work and they've actually been amazing and really helped me and really, like, help develop me, especially, like, I genuinely would say, like, my BBC family, my kind of family at BBC Three, you know, we started working together during lockdown, during COVID. Mm. None of us had met. I don't think any of us had really even Zoomed. I think we were all just emails and all of that stuff. And I really realised how much, you know, that my amazing team at BBC were rooting for me and really believed in, you know, my storytelling and my documentaries and the impact of that. And as soon as COVID was done, I was like, we all have to meet. So I would say they're the first people that spring to mind, really, who I've, like, made a connection with, but because of work, I guess. But then I've had to meet them. Like, I couldn't keep that relationship just on email. No way.
Well, I think that's really interesting, because actually they're the people that have significantly changed your narrative, right? Because they've enabled you to tell really powerful stories. And nobody would have given you that chance unless they really thought you could do it. And there is something about you, Zara. I sat down to watch Love in the Flesh and I'd seen you. I follow you on Instagram and I follow Sam. But when I actually saw you host, part of me was like, because I know it's a job, right? Television presenting is a job and not everybody can do it. And there is this kind of, in recent years, you know, this evolution of people coming from contestant to host on reality shows. And you think, oh, this could be, you know, this could be really awkward. You're great. You've got something.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. It actually means so much.
No, you've got it. I watch you and I don't... when I'm watching the screen and you're there, I'm not looking at anybody else. That's very powerful. And you don't overplay it. You don't overcook it. You're interested in everybody that you're talking to. You're a real natural, Zara, and I can't wait to see what else you do.
Oh, thank you. Do you know what? So Love in the Flesh, I've really not been able to speak about how we made it and everything, but so that, and you'll understand this, and I think it's really important that I say it because people don't really understand how these shows are made, but when I went out there, I'd never used auto cue, which is really important. And I'd never had an earpiece in. So I didn't know that so many presenters have earpieces in, someone telling them what to say. So for my big set pieces, my director was like, I believe you can do this. No auto cue and no one in your ear. We're going to do this and we're going to write this script and you're going to deliver it as you. And I was like, oh my God, I was so panicked. I'd never presented something like this before. Mm. And also I had almost a safety net of auto cue of someone in my ear. I didn't have that for a lot of the show. For some of it I did, but for the big pieces I didn't. Oh my gosh, I was so nervous because it was just like, they were like, my director was like, you will thank me so much when this finishes, because this is going to be a baptism of fire. and you're gonna smash it. This is gonna be hard, but you're gonna do it. And I was like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. And I look at myself and I'm like, I know how nervous I was doing that. And my mum was watching it the other day. I've shown her all the episodes and she was like, you don't look nervous at all. But it's good that my mum can't even sense that I'm nervous. So I did a good job at like hiding how scared I was.
And also, you know, I think that director gave you one of the best pieces of advice. Be a part of writing the script, because that's then you own it. It's your voice. And make sure you've got something to say.
Absolutely.
And never say too much. That's the other thing. It's like, take a script and then halve it. And then it's in the right, then it's the right duration. That would be my experience. But the auto cue is a real skill. And actually, once you've cracked it, it becomes a crutch, which is lovely. But until you crack it, it's quite daunting. The earpiece is next level, depending on whether or not you work on open talkback or switch. And when you're on open talkback, you can hear the entire gallery whilst you're trying to have a one-on-one interview or exchange with somebody.
Oh my god, I don't know how. I had a little bit of that, but not loads. Most of the stuff I did was just me, yeah, and like great. Learning small parts of scripts and kind of ad-libbing where I could. Honestly,
but you know what? If you were straight off the bat at home with it and easy with it, you'd be weird, because it's a bit like trying to talk as we are now, but whilst tapping your head and rubbing your tummy in a circular. It's like, because you're doing effectively three things at once, as I am right now. But, you know, so I could be talking to you right now. But, when I used to do big shows like X Factor, and if you're working on open, you can hear all the cameras being called. That's 13 cameras. Plus the vision mixer, plus the producer, and then the director constantly talking. So it's a lot. But you learn to tune in and tune out when it's weird, but it takes time. And so you just give yourself time to become comfortable with that. But trust me, you're really good. And keep going, Zara.
Oh, thank you. Really, thank you so much. That really means a lot. Really does.
No, you're absolutely smashing it. Now tell me about some of these couples, because I think some of the moments you had to navigate were really quite awkward. I mean, there were ones where the first one in episode one, the first couple get off the boat and they meet each other and you're like, this is going to go well. Love this. This is lovely. Two couples later, it was mega orcs.
Oh my gosh, I know. I think, to be honest, I think that everyone was expecting a fairy tale moment. And I was expecting a fairy tale moment from everyone. And do you know that there's that the statistic, isn't there? It's like you make your mind up about someone, how attracted you are, how much you like them in like 6 seconds or something ridiculous. And it really does exemplify that in this show. Like, you can tell who's connected and who's not connected within the first 5 seconds of them seeing each other. Like, you as a person, you watch it and you're like, they're gonna work, they're not gonna work. And do you know what? You might be right about some, you might be wrong about some, I can't say, but you kind of know who's got that initial spark, who's got that initial attraction. Especially, so Brandon and Hannah, when they first met, oh my god, I remember just being sat there like, I would love to see Brandon when he actually liked someone. I think the problem was, you know, with Hannah is that he didn't fancy her from day one. She's a stunning girl, but I just don't think I don't think she was necessarily his 100% type. But what I love so much about the show is it really captures this like online dating. You know, she was initially so excited, you know, we have all these amazing conversations and we have quite deep intellectual conversations and you know, we talk all the time and made it out to be this thing, and then you really believe it as a viewer. You're like, oh, okay, right, hopefully this is going to go well then, because they seem very connected. And then you see them, and that was her reality. Her reality was that version of Brandon. And then they met, and everything that she knew about him or thought she knew about him was swept away.
And also, his poker face was not great. You could tell that he was not feeling her.
She's such a sweet girl. But unfortunately, not every relationship works out. And you know, it really does show that you can't ever kind of place all your bets on someone that you've met online, because they can be so different. And it's also not just about how they speak, how they converse. Like, you can talk to someone on the phone, you can FaceTime, you can kind of get a sense of understanding about who they are. But actually, it's about how they carry themselves, what are their mannerisms, you know. there's so much you can't tell from FaceTime. Oh, God, yeah. And I think that this example really, like, exemplified that.
It was interesting, though, because seemingly the sort of, you know, the common thread between the group was that these are a bunch of people that felt far more comfortable having a relationship from a very long distance than they did bringing it into the real world. That it was easier to say, oh, I'm with somebody and we talk all the time and you send glamorous pictures to each other, but you never connect the human dots.
But do you know what else I noticed it just by walking in there, is that there wasn't this sense of, like, I need to do everything I can to impress that person. There wasn't as much of that as I was thinking. Like, there wasn't, like, when you naturally meet someone for the first time, you're on your best behaviour. You're trying to be the best version of yourself. You know, would you like a drink? Would you like something to eat? Like, oh, being very hands-on, very affectionate, very physical. I felt like with these guys, because they already knew each other, that part just skipped and all was replaced with their online connection. And I felt like quite quickly, some of them got quite lazy.
Yeah, they did.
And they didn't feel like they needed to put the effort in because they feel like that person already know. They already know me. They already like me. It's fine.
But that might explain why fundamentally most of their relationships exist in cyberspace.
Absolutely. Because they don't have the capacity to invest at that point in their life to another person in a more physical way. I just find the whole thing so interesting. Like, it's all about kind of human behaviour. It's essentially a social experiment, right? It's human behaviour. Like, how do we behave now we've got all these other distractions that we never had 50 years ago? Like, how has it changed the dating landscape? And this show really exemplifies that and really just takes a hold of that. In a really beautiful way. And that's why I'm a massive, obviously massive fan of the show, but...
You better be. You're allowed to be. It's yours. Okay. Are you ready for your final question? You met Sam for the first time in a club, way before you went on Love Island, before you even knew who he was. And... Yeah. You were in the same room on the same night, but your paths didn't cross until many years later, I think it was, wasn't it? When you finally got it together. So I wondered, when else has someone or something even had to cross your path more than once in order to get your attention?
I actually love this question because my answer to that is genuinely never. Only Sam. It's the only, like, good example of that. But never, because I always want to be that person, and that I always think of myself when I'm old and grey and probably in my care home. I want to lay on my bed and think, I never said no to anything and I never let anything slide past me without realising, without noticing. Like, I will always be present. I will always notice everything. And I have always noticed everything, and I have always said yes. Even at times where I was scared or I was nervous or I didn't think I could do it, I've always said yes. So the answer to that question is only Sam is the only time I feel that's like that's really... ever happened. Genuinely.
Well, that's quite meaningful, though, because he's pretty significant in your life now, isn't he?
He is, yes. He is just downstairs somewhere. I told him to pop up, but I think he's on the sofa curled up, all a bit ill.
Yeah, Sam's not very well. You had to take him to hospital yesterday.
Yeah.
The day before recording. And he had to have a pretty brutal procedure.
Yeah. He's not stopped talking about. You know what it is with men? He keeps going to me, I've had surgery. I was like, no, you haven't. You had a biopsy taken. He's like, I've had surgery, Sarah. Give me attention.
Do you know what? You two on Instagram are funny. I mean, Sam's a funny guy. And again, in terms of sort of shifting people's perceptions of you, I look forward to your posts because they are hilarious, especially when he's trying to get a reaction from you and you just don't really go there some days.
Oh, and you know what? It's like, you know what they say with children, if you don't want them to do it again, don't give them any reaction. Like, just like, don't take any notice. That's like him. That's what I do. I took that advice from my mum.
So you just ignore it. But you are very... But he has this passionate love for you and also for Pete Wicks, again, who's been on this show. And Pete has exactly the same tactics as you. Just ignore him, don't give him oxygen.
I love Pete so much. I get on so well with Pete. He's brilliant. I love him. But yeah, it's so funny. I love the days where Pete comes over and Sam's like, come over, please come over. And he's like, it takes genuinely him weeks and weeks of begging Pete to come over. And he's like, I don't want to come over because I know you're going to make me do something stupid. Are you going to do something on me? And Sam, no, I promise I won't. Please, 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 please. Sam's almost got to the point where he's starting to have to pay him to come. So Pete now will come and he'll just be sat there on the sofa, honestly, face like a smacked ass, will not want to get involved. So I'm like, come on, please do a dance with me. He's like, no, leave me alone. It's so funny. And I love the days where he's round and I'm like at home a bit so I can watch what's going on with my own eyes, because I just sit there and I'm just in fits of laughter. There's been times where Sam's like, can you quickly just like film something low key just so if Pete doesn't notice, come and do something on him. And I'm filming and I'm already laughing before I'm filming, and I'm like, you can't even use this, because I'm like
behind the shots all shaky. They are a very good comedy duo, as are you and Sam though. And I think, you know, if you can laugh together as you two do.
I never thought I was funny.
Well, you're funny.
I never thought I was. I thought I was quite boring, but Sam's brought out a funnier side of me, I must say.
Yeah.
And also, something he's taught me, which is really, do you know what? It's really weird. Actually, do you know what? I kind of do have a semi-answer to your question. Okay. A semi-answer. So, when I was younger, I always used to want to go out with a guy who was like really posy, took himself seriously. One of those guys that are constantly posting gym photos on Instagram, like really takes himself so seriously. And it was really interesting because I dated a guy just before Sam and it didn't work out. But one thing I took away from him was that he was just not my type at all. And we got on, but there was something I liked about him, and I realised I liked in a person. I really liked the fact that he didn't take himself too seriously. He was really funny. And then when I met Sam, I was like, oh, he's good looking, he's funny, he doesn't take himself too seriously, he's my type. Like, I like blonde guys. He's so totally my type, and, you know, and he likes me. And I was like, oh my god, the stars just align with this guy, because he was everything that I'd wanted in a person, and he just came along and it was great. So that's something where something's crossed my self, like my person, twice for me to take notice, I would
say. Yeah. And so when you obviously you've been in the same nightclub as Sam, you posted a picture of yourself on that night.
Yeah.
And it's always lovely when you're kind of, you know, wrapped up in the love and security of a long-term relationship to go, oh, and we didn't know, but I was in the same room as him as that night, breathing the same air, but, you know, our paths didn't cross. How did you instigate the relationship? Was it you that slid into his DMs?
Well, he followed me on Instagram, was liking all my photos, like all of them. And then one of my friends was like, you know, Sam Thompson's like, I follow him and he's like, liked all of your photos and he follows you and everything. Like, have you thought about messaging him? Because he's like, he's your type of guy. Like, he's really good looking. He's just the kind of guy I would go for looks wise before. So I was like, interesting. I've obviously very briefly met him once, but he probably wouldn't even remember. And I just thought, you know what? He's clearly like, maybe he's not messaging me, I don't know. So I just replied to one of his Instagram stories with a laughing face. Very, very easy. Very good tactic.
Yeah, that is. That's low level. That's nice. Yeah.
Low level. And you can always be like, do you know what? Sorry, that was a mistake. Or, oh, I just found your Instagram story funny. Like,
you're funny. Come on, funny guy. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I like it. That's really good. And then how did he respond? Because he's like, I guess,
oh,
let me guess, like Tigger.
That was like opening the floodgates.
Exactly. Yeah. Tigger bounced through the door, starts licking your face. Yeah.
He started sending me really weird chat up lines, asked me if I wanted to play Scrabble. Asked me, honestly, it was really funny. But yeah, that was like opening the floodgates, and he was like, it was like the inn he wanted.
You know, Sam's mum's been on the podcast, don't you?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I love Karen. She's so great.
She was wonderful. And I didn't realise, because, you know, I see all your stories and your posts. I thought when you said you guys were getting your first house together, I thought you were staying with her while you did your house up, right?
We did for a bit.
But then I'm following. I'm thinking, I almost messaged her the other day to say, where are your floors from? Because I'm renovating my house. And I was like, oh no, they're your floors. You, Zara and Sam, have got yourself the most incredible. I mean, you've done this house up so beautifully, Zara.
Oh, thank you.
And I just didn't think that a couple so young could have A, such incredible taste, and B, that, you know, the desire to want to build, almost renovate a house from the ground up. But you live next door to Sam's sister Louise and her partner and their baby.
Yeah, so we're all a bit of a, I mean, and also Karen lives across the road.
No.
So we're all, so Karen lives two roads behind us, she lives. So she's like a 3-minute walk away, which is lovely. So yeah, we're all very close. We see each other. Literally, I see Louise and Ryan every day.
Oh, it's nice. So you've got this family unit that, I mean, most people wouldn't go and move and buy a house that's sort of 3 minutes from their potential mother-in-law and right next door to their boyfriend's sister.
Yeah, but do you know what? It's just so lovely. Like, we're so lucky, genuinely. Like, if I need something, if I'm locked out, if I'm like, God, I don't have any sugar, if I'm like, I just want some company, I'm a bit bored, I just knock on the door and just go
get
in.
Away from Sam for a bit. Yeah,
genuinely. Louise is always like, if you want to come and get away, you can get away. So yeah, and I am incredibly lucky to have them just next door. Literally, our houses join to the point where the other day me and Sam were playing. Sam was playing some music, cooking some dinner, and Ryan texted him going, I can hear your speakers. So you've got to think about these things. You've got to be very respectful neighbours, obviously.
But you guys, I mean, like your renovations, so you've got your own separate Instagram account. What's it called for the house?
It's called The Thompson Project.
The Thompson Project. And seriously, you have incredible taste. I mean,
Thank you.
The bath is very sexy, but not quite as sexy as your marble island. One whole piece of marble. I mean, literally, I've stalked your interiors.
I do it every day on myself as well because I just love everything so much. But the marble, oh my God.
It's a thing of beauty. Just,
but I don't let anyone go near it.
Do you not?
I'm like, don't put your drink on that. No, it's the most unpractical thing I've ever got. But worth it because it's lovely to look at.
But how's it been trying to fuse two tastes into one and the stresses hard. Of renovating a house, right? Yeah, hard.
Hard.
Yeah.
Well, that, I must say, so we actually, worst thing ever, so we ripped the whole house out, right? So we had basically floorboards, no ceilings, nothing. And we were like, right, we're going to stay in this house for as long as we can because Louise and Ryan also were renovating their house. We did it at the same time. And they lived with Sam's mum at the time. So we were all going to move into Sam's mum together. But we were like, it's just going to be a very cramped house. Let's just try and keep it as long as possible. Then we get COVID the day the house has been ripped out. So we're sleeping on a mattress on the floor for 2 weeks. Couldn't leave the house. It was horrendous. I thought I was gonna kill him. I had no kitchen, no living room, no Wi-Fi, nothing.
Nothing.
Just me and him. Just me and him in one room with a mattress. It was horrific. And then we moved into this very small studio flat and we lived there for about 5 months. We had no space. Just literally one room was just the kitchen. And I completely understand a lot of people, you know, that's, you know, a lot of people live in places like that.
Yeah, but they're not living with Sam.
They're not living with Sam. No, they're not living with a boyfriend who pranks them all day, every day, who sits there and games until God knows what time and shouts, I can't even have a phone call. That was hard. But then the design process, definitely, we have very different tastes with things. But what I've learned with Sam, this is something I've learned, is that he needs to see it to like understand my vision. So if I'm like, I want a big mirror here, he'll be like, no, that'll look stupid. No, no, no. But I have to actually
show him a picture.
Or just do it. And then he's like, I said I didn't want that. And I'm like, but trust, look how nice it is. And then he'll go, oh yeah, I see what you mean now. So like, I've learned that I kind of have to just, he'll say no to everything because he's just, I don't know why he's like that, but he'll just be like, no, no, that looks silly. No, 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 no to everything. So I just do it. And then he gets used to it. That's my tactic.
And like, you know, obviously it can suck the romance out of a relationship pretty quickly when you're living in those kind of conditions and making big decisions and you're not getting, you're not agreeing on everything. Plus, he's totally pranking you every day for the gram.
I know. It's just... I must say, when we moved back in here when it was still like very much a building site, because we were like, we can't do the studio flat. I just couldn't do it anymore. So I was like, well, we have to, at least we have like different rooms, even though the rooms have nothing in them. At least I can go and at least have a phone call or something. Yeah. So we moved back in here like when it was pretty much a building site. And yeah, it is really testing on your relationship. Yeah. I never realised how hard it would be. Genuinely, I never... realize, because you've got so many big decisions to make, you've got like budgets to think about, you've got even things down to the colors of the walls that you might not agree on. Like, how do you come to a decision on that?
Yeah, it's really hard, isn't it? It's really hard.
Yeah, and things go wrong, things always go
wrong. And they
cost
some,
things go
the budget
wrong.
Has to be almost elastic because it will stretch.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it was just a massive experience, because like, I mean, we started this renovation, I was 24. So 24 years old to be doing like a 4-bedroom house full renovation is quite a big thing to do at like quite a young age. And I didn't really know anything about it, so I've learned a lot through the process, I think.
Oh, Zara, do you know what? I was really looking forward to talking to you. We've never spoken before. I really hope we get to do it again.
I love speaking to you. It's so
you're
fun.
Great, and please give Sam my very, very best, and to Karen.
I will.
And all the family.
I will.
But I really will watch with great excitement to see where you go and what you decide to do next. The world's your oyster. At the risk of sounding like an old lady, what a lovely young woman. Really enjoyed talking to Zara. Thank you so much for joining me for this week's episode. And don't forget, you can tune in to Love in the Flesh on BBC Three and catch it on Catch Up on BBC iPlayer with new episodes weekly from the 23rd of March. And if you fancy hearing more great chat with some stars of reality television, why not dive in to our back catalogue and feast on conversations with Pete Wicks, Zoe Hardman, Toff, Georgia Toffolo, Scarlett Moffat, Jamie Lang, Laura Whitmore, Emma Willis and Giovanna Fletcher, Roman Kemp, or First Dates maitre d' Fred Siriex. There's loads there. Fill your boots, kids. My thanks, as always, to you for lending us your ears, and to Ben Robbins and the Yahid Studios team who produced the show with me. The show's edited by Eleanor Humphrey, and our music, as always, is by Andy Bell, who has new solo material out now. Do check it out, alongside his back catalogue with Ride and, of course, Oasis. I'll be back next Friday with more great chat. Until then, take care out there.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.